Hello and welcome to Really Cool People, a podcast produced by Schweitzer Church. I'm your host, Jason Leininger. This is a place to hear stories of really cool people whose stories are fascinating, whose lives are interesting, and the hope is that as we listen along, we'll be inspired, encouraged, and challenged through moments of serendipity. Now, many of the people that we'll hear think of themselves as ordinary. They're just going about their daily life in an ordinary fashion. But C.S. Lewis reminds us that there are really no ordinary people. You and I have never talked to a mere mortal. Everyone's story is interesting. Today, we're going to hear from Stephanie Mosley. Stephanie was born into a pastor's family in Texas, and she got to move around from Oklahoma to Kansas, and finally, she came to Missouri. She's also going to share with us what her adult life was like as she became a mom and she went to college and got a degree while she was raising kids, and what life is like in retirement. So I invite you to lean in with me to listen to the story of Stephanie Mosley. Today on Really Cool People, we're glad to welcome Stephanie Mosley. Stephanie, let's begin with your story.
Okay, Stephanie Mosley. Stephanie was born Stephanie Ann Tolliver, and I was born in Dallas, Texas, and my dad was a Methodist minister. Actually, he was a AME, which is African Methodist Episcopal minister, and I was born June the 24th, 1954. You can count it up. And after I was born, my dad was in the ministry. I had a brother, Marvin, at the time. He was like 2 or 3 days less than a year older than I am. So everybody thought we were twins. And so we grew up all across Oklahoma and Kansas, and in the little, at that time, the ministers would go to the very little outback towns where they ministered. There weren't any other kids there, so me and Marvin were generally the only children that were in the congregations. And we grew up, you remember when in Garden City, Kansas, where they had the death of the Clutter family, and they made it into a movie in Cold Blood. And this was like back in 1959. And at the time, these people had went in and they had went to this Clutter family thinking that they had a lot of money and everything, and they were going to rob them. But instead, they had nothing, and they ended up killing the whole family. And when they brought those men into custody, our parsonage that we lived in was like 3 doors down from the police department. So it was like Grand Central Station there for about a week or so, with all the people coming in, looking, trying to see what was going on at that. And of course, I was just 5 at the time, but it was a big imprint on my mind, just knowing that this big occurrence had occurred in our little bitty town. So we moved from there again, all over Oklahoma and Kansas. And when we were in Emporia, Kansas, was when my dad decided that he needed to get closer back to a southern type of city. We had excellent education, but at the time, me and my brother would always be the only blacks in the school. We were it, because all of the other families, there were older black families, but the younger ones would always move to a big city. They wouldn't stay in these little towns. So he decided that we needed to get more into our own culture. And so that's when he looked around and he was trying to decide between going to Tulsa, Oklahoma or Springfield, Missouri. And when he started reading about the Tulsa riots and the burnings and all that, he decided, well, maybe we better go to Springfield. Even though there were the hangings on the square and all that, he felt like maybe that was the lesser of two evils. So we moved to Springfield when I was 9 years old. And that was the first time that I had really gone to school with people of my own color. And it was like an eye-opening for me because I had never really realized that there was a difference, or people thought there was a difference, because we had always been treated the same. One big thing that I remember about when I moved here was the killing of the president, Kennedy. And he was killed in Dallas, Texas, where I was born. And they also took him to the hospital, Parkland Hospital, and that's the hospital I was born in. So I felt like I had a connection with the president. So that was a big thing with us. My family, at the time, there were the two of us, Marvin and me, and later on, my sisters came along, and there was like 9 years difference between the third sister and 11 with the fourth, and it was like a different family. It was like I had a baby instead of my mom having a baby. And when they were born, there were the four of us. And we didn't know until my sister Maria was born that we had a brother. And this was a brother that my dad had had before he got married. And so at that time, he decided he wanted to get his son with the family. And so we went down to pick him up. He probably would have been 18 or 19 at the time. And when we got there, he was in Mississippi. And when we got there, he had just got married the night before. It was a big surprise. Nobody knew that he was getting married or anything. They thought they were just picking him up to get him up to live with us and go to school and all that. But at any rate, we brought back him and his wife to Springfield. And he lived here for years. What else? When I was going through school, we did all the normal, school things where I wasn't into sports or anything, and they didn't really have those kind of, like basketball or anything like that. So when I was over at Central, I got into the Kilties. And so I played a snare drum in the Kilties and sang in the choir. We had like a quartet and a madrigal that we sang in, and we'd go to state and we'd get, the awards for all that. So I had a real good high school and junior high, and actually all through from the time we moved here, I had a really good school time. Actually, the kids that I was in school with, which are now, we're the same age, we have really kind of clung together. We have different affairs. We meet, the women meet for breakfast like once every quarter. We get together, of course, on our family, on our high school reunions. And everybody is like family. And there's no problems that we have. We're just family. So let's see, what else? Oh, schooling. When I decided that I wanted to go to school, my mom and dad paid for my brother all through school. I felt that he was going to be a professional student at one time. And when it came time for me to go, they felt, and I felt at the time also, that all I needed was to continue my secretarial work, and I knew shorthand, and I went through the civil service test and took that, and so I was just going to be a secretary for the rest of my life. Well, then I got kind of itchy after I got married and started having kids. I thought, I need something more permanent. I need something else. And so with that, I started going to school nights. So I went to school nights while having two kids. And I went for quite a few years because I just take a class here and a class there. But eventually I got my associate degree from Drury. And then I continued on and got my bachelor's degree. I didn't get that until the year 2000. But it was I don't know how I did it. I look back now and wonder, how could I have gone to school this many years back and forth? I would take my daughter to school with me, and I'd take colors with her, and she'd sit in one of the chairs and color while I was in class. And my son, I don't think I said I had two kids. I had Rhonda and Rundell. And Rundell was the oldest, and he was 4 years older than what Rhonda is. And they were in all kinds of sports and volleyball and basketball and football and you name it, they were in. Because my husband is an athlete. And so he was in a lot of things. He was like a boxer, and then he turned to be a referee of professional boxing. And so he kind of kept them busy into the sports world. So then after I graduated from Drury, I had worked at several different places. I worked for the Department of Agriculture first. And when I went through the civil service deal, I got a job with the Agriculture Department here in Springfield. Then after a couple of years, I was called by my high school teacher, she was my business teacher, to tell me that there was an opening at the railroad, and she thought that maybe I'd be a good fit. So I went and applied for the railroad job and got it, and I worked for the Frisco Railroad for 9.5 years. And I was in the law department, the claims division of the law department there. And we took in all the reports of accidents and, you know, claims, and, you know, anybody that had a claim or a suit against the railroad, then we would keep records of it. Then when they merged with the Burlington Northern, they wanted me to move to Billings, Montana. And I had two small kids and my husband, and I looked at him and I knew there was one other black family in Billings, Montana at that time. And I said, I don't think this is going to work. So I started looking for another job, and I went to work for Foremost Dairies. And that used to be one of the biggest dairies here in the area, over Highland Dairies. And worked there for about 4 years until they went bankrupt. So then I started looking again for another job. And all in this time, I'm, you know, kind of going in and out of school. And went through the employment agency here in Springfield and got a call from 3M. And when I interviewed with 3M, I let them know that I went through, you know, the railroad, which went through going through their Burlington Northern buyout. And then I worked for Foremost Dairies, who went bankrupt. So they were a little concerned about me going into 3M, wondering, you know, okay, is she gonna cause us to have a problem here? But they went ahead and hired me. So, so I worked for 3M for 28 and a half years. I started ground level in the customer service department, moved up to where we took in orders. And after that, I became a supervisor over the shipping and receiving departments. Then they had they combined some departments and stuff out there. So not only was I the supervisor of the shipping and receiving department, I was also the supervisor of a production area. So I had probably about 40 or 50 people that worked under me at the time. And went through that for several years until I decided, you know, dealing with people, especially I had a whole group of men that was really stressful. So I decided that I needed to change, and I was still at 3M, and I moved into the supply chain group where I was a supply chain analyst, and I scheduled for about 9 mixers down the hallway, and you scheduled with getting the raw materials in, scheduling the run, scheduling the people, and scheduling the finished product to go out. So it was a pretty heavy load there. But at the same time, it was kind of funny when I left the material handlers, they said, "Would you come back?" And I said, "No, you didn't want me when you had me. So, you know, be careful what you ask for." So that's where I ended up my career at 3M, and I retired in 2015. And since then, and in the middle of all that, I was going to different churches around here. My dad had moved. They had closed Reedy Chapel, and he had kind of moved to different towns that he would go and minister to. And since I had a family and trying to bring them up, I decided I needed a change. So I kind of started trying different churches. And I tried one of the Methodist churches. And then after thinking about it, I had a friend that got me into changing over to Baptist. So I went to Washington Avenue Baptist Church. And I became one of the trustees on the board. And we were kind of instrumental. And I'm not going to say that I was so involved in it, but kind of instrumental to when they tore down the Washington Avenue over there by Drury College, Drury University now, and moved it over one block or just from one corner to the other corner, brick by brick. And then we marched to the new location, which is over on National. And it's growing. That church is now growing. But at the same time, there was a minister there that I was confused. And I think at that time I was trying to grasp another father figure within him. And it came out that he was not a father figure at all, and was very disappointing. So with that, I had talked with a friend, Deb Sanderson. I worked with her at 3M, and she talked me into coming here to Schweitzer. And I kind of started with going to some of the Bible study classes that they had, and some that Bob Cassidy had presented, and I really got, I guess, into my thoughts of knowing what God truly wanted with me. He'd moved me around to all these different places. I had all this stuff within me, and it was at that point that I said, I think this should be my home. And I had already begun bringing my grandson with me, and I think he was about 5 when we started coming here just kind of coming to the Vacation Bible School and things like that. So this has just been a real relaxing, in my thought basis, place to be. And I think that's all I can think of.
Well, I've been enjoying listening to you give the account of your life and starting from your birth all the way up to, you know, your work and your retirement. You mentioned a number of different things, and then you left some gaps. And So I wonder if we couldn't explore some of those gaps together. One of the things you mentioned early on was that your dad was a AME pastor starting in Dallas. That's where you were born.
Yes.
What was it like to grow up as a pastor's kid? I mean, you got a unique, like, there's the unique reality, and you mentioned that along the way. Like, sometimes you'd go to churches, and you and your brother were the only black kids that were going to school. And that's a whole nother unique understanding that you can describe for me and some other folks, because we've never had that. But you're a PK, and I've got PKs that live in my house. I'm not one, but I mean, I've got PKs that live in my house. So what's it like to be a PK?
What's it like? During that time period, PK, we were expected to be just the best kids. You know, you did no wrong. Yes, we were, bad and mischievous and did things that we shouldn't, but at the same time, we were looked on as if we were supposed to be, they presented us as the ideal, kids. We would have to, at that time when my dad would have circumment, it would be first Sunday, we would go to all the nursing homes, the hospitals, and it would be me, mom, dad, Marvin. And that was our little preaching session where he would go and give them circumment, and we'd have to sing a song for them. And that was just a natural thing. And that was all through my childhood, all the way up through probably when I was into junior high, when I started, rebelling back and saying, I don't want to do this. But it was a lot of the congregations looked upon us as if they were trying to find something that we do wrong, and they'd want to, look, they did that. But yet and still, it was a good upbringing. But as far as the knowledge of God, it was like I knew no different. God was there from the time I was born all the way up till now. And it wasn't like I had a big revelation that, here's God and he's here to save and protect me. It was as if I had learned it all through my life. And it was just something that I knew that I was supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. It was within me. So it wasn't easy. And I think more people had something about us and trying to find fault with us than what we had. So it was kind of funny to be able to say, no, that wasn't my child.
You mentioned something like going around the first Sunday of the month. You called it circumment?
Circumment. They called it circumment. Circumment is just like what we do at the first of the month.
Have communion.
Yeah. And we called it circumment.
Okay. Yeah. I've never heard it called that before. do you remember any of the songs that you used to sing?
Oh, no. There are so many. I mean, I know one that my mom would always sing. We are our Father's heavenly children. And, we've come this far by faith. Just, and it's just bits and pieces. Mm-hmm. Because since I don't sing them anymore, they're kind of gone. Hmm. But
did your dad ever ask you to preach?
No, he did not. I think he wanted my brother to preach. Dad was kind of the old school, where he felt that the men should do the preaching and the working and the going, and the women should be the, you know, raising the kids and at the house. I put him out on a thing when I wanted to be a secretary and work out of the house. But at the same time, he had two other girls that came up like 9 and 11 years after me. And the baby girl went to Rolla and became an engineer. And my other sister, which I hadn't mentioned, Maria, she had gone to school kind of like I did. Probably she had two or three different associate degrees. And then she contracted leukemia. She had leukemia. Hmm. And at the time, she had two children, a 5-year-old boy and a 9-year-old girl. And so we had went through going to, I think it was Kansas City that we went to give her a bone marrow transplant. And guess who got to do the bone marrow?
You did.
I did. And so I gave her the bone marrow. And this was on a Thanksgiving day. They always did stuff on holidays like that. And I had to fly there. And after I'd done the bone marrow, then I had to fly back that same day because they didn't want to pay for me to stay any longer. And so when I got home, I walked to go to Kansas City to give the bone marrow, and I came home in a wheelchair. Very painful. And then after I got home for a few days trying to get back on my feet, my back went out. And they had to haul me to the hospital in an ambulance to get me back walking again. So that was kind of a thing in our life. The transplant didn't work very well. Like I said, it was done on Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. And she passed the following February. So it just didn't take at all.
But how old were you?
Oh, gosh. I was probably, let's see, she was 27 at the time. So I would have been about 35 mm-hmm. when I did this. So that was a turning point, just to lose her mm-hmm. and not realize what all was going on.
Do you think of yourself as pretty close with your siblings?
Yes, very close. Like my baby sister, Letha, now, she lives in Detroit. And she's been like the leader of a BSF group. Mm. And I'm involved in her group that she has on Tuesday evenings. And so it's like an international group where there's women from all over the country that dial in on Zoom for her Zoom meeting. And so we do that. Letha was kind of like my baby. And even when she was going to school in Rolla, when she'd come home, she'd always come to my house. And she'd stay with me. And if she was sick, she'd call me and I'd try to help her. She moved practically every semester, she was moving to a different place. And it would always be like on a second or third floor. And so we'd have to go there and haul all her stuff from one floor to the next place. But she did, I think it took her 5 years to get through Rolla. And then she started with Eastman Kodak as far as working. And she was like a traveling chemical sales rep. And then that's when they transferred her to Detroit. And she was there. And then she met her husband there. And that was that.
Hmm. You mentioned that you're married.
Yes.
But you didn't tell us your husband's name.
My husband's name is William. We call him Bill.
Yeah.
And we've been married. We got married February 7th, 1975.
How'd you guys meet?
Actually, we met at the swimming pool over there at Silver Springs Park. I was 16, taking money. and he came in to swim. And it began there. So it's been 47, 48 years now. So we actually, when I started going with him, he was playing golf. And he got me into playing golf. So I played golf on the women's league and over at what is now, what's it called now? The golf course out there by 44. Darn it. Can't think of what. The fellow that died that was his father's, they've named it after him and his father. Can't even think of it. My mind just flashed off.
All I can remember about that gentleman was he used
Stewart.
Payne Stewart.
Payne Stewart, yes, at their golf course. And I was in the ladies' league there for years.
He used to wear knickers
when he played. Yes, he did. And then I went and played in a tournament in Willard. And I had a hole in one.
Wow.
And my husband's never had a hole in one, ever. So I always have to pull that over on him to let him know I'm the one in the family that had the hole in one. So
you're saying there's a bit of competition between the two of you?
Just a tad bit. Just a tad bit.
That is fascinating. you described as a kid moving around a lot.
Yep.
And then your dad made the decision between Tulsa or Springfield. And, you know, it's fascinating to hear you describe that. Like, two significant negative historical events.
Right.
Came into play for both of those, you know, those decisions. But then what was it like to move here? And, you know, you said you went to school for the first time with other kids.
Yes. It was a eye-opening. Again, we weren't brought up to know that there was any differences or anything. It was just the fact that all the places that we had lived, any kids that would have been our age, their families had moved away from all these little towns. Because, you know, most of the kids, they would leave their parents, their grandparents, who wouldn't move from those areas. And they say, no, we're going to the big city. So most of them had moved. And so with me and Marvin, we only had each other and the kids that we would play with. So we would play with the kids around the block and, you know, in our neighborhood and everything. And it didn't dawn on us that there was a difference. And didn't even think about there being a difference until we came here. And then that's when we were actually faced with some forms of racism, of not being able to go into certain places, you know, certain stores, or having people, you know, really look at you differently or talk to you differently. This was the first place that that occurred in.
It's fascinating that, I mean, from some of those places you described earlier, which I take it to be rather rural, and then coming to a bigger city, coming to a city where there's, on the one hand, a larger sense of diversity, yet this is where there was racism.
Yes.
More pronounced. How'd you work through that in your heart and your soul?
It was difficult. I mean, it still is in certain respects, because you wonder why people consider you different or lower than just because of your skin color. And I think that's one of the reasons why I kept trying to get an education. My dad was real high on education. And I thought, okay, if I get this education, they'll see that I'm just like everybody else. I'm just as smart as and just as intelligent as. So I think that's what pushed me to go ahead and strive to get more. Dad was blessed to have all four of his children that were there at the house that he had raised. We all had college educations, and I thought that was a blessing for him, mm-hmm. knowing that that's what he liked. And it did help me. It helped me to succeed, in the workforce and everything else. But at the same time, I found out that succeeding in the workforce isn't everything, because if you're not settled within your heart with what you're doing, then it's nothing. And but I'm thankful. I'm thankful that God brought me through different things, and that way I know I'm a whole person, mm-hmm. because I've experienced the negativity, the positive, and all the stuff in between.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've got a number of questions. I'd love to keep talking, and you are a font of information and knowledge and wisdom. It's great to have you here. You mentioned at one point that Reedy Chapel closed. Was that a place where your dad was at?
Yes, it was Reedy Chapel AME Church. It was over West Springfield, over on Weaver Street. And we lived in the parsonage next door. And the congregation just started getting smaller and mm-hmm. smaller, with the different family deaths and stuff like that. And then at a certain point, they kind of closed down, which Dad had already moved on from there. And he was he was traveling to Boonville, Missouri, mm-hmm. at a church, AME church there. And then that traveling was just really too much because he was getting on up there in age. And so then he just stopped. Hmm. He worked at City Utilities.
Okay.
And because there was no way that he could, raise a family and off of what the little stipend that he was getting from the church. And he worked at the pole barn, it used to be the first time they had the pole barn out there, where they would get the big poles that they have, the electricity and stuff that they run through. And he was like one of the first that operated the big pole crane. He taught himself. Everything he did, he taught himself. And so he taught himself to move those and stack them. And it was his pride and joy that he arranged that pole barn area. It was off of West Division Street.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked there for years until they built that... the deal out here on Springfield Lake, Lake of Springfield, the one that they tore down, the one that they blew up.
Okay.
He worked there when they first put that into effect, before he retired.
Hmm.
So
one thing, a piece of reflection is to, I wonder if you could take a look at your childhood and think about the things that your parents, instilled within you. And maybe even some of the things you instilled within your own kids. Like, what are some of the critical key takeaways you like? These are some emphases of my own life that are, I can trace back to the influence of my parents. I passed them along.
Well, the one was the education.
Mm-hmm.
The other was not to follow, to always try to lead. Because if you follow, you're picking up someone else's bad vibe or bad habits. And not so much leading a whole group or anything, but just taking within yourself to know the right from wrong and lead that through. I don't know. He instilled in us to love everybody. We didn't really have a negative point of not liking someone. Mm-hmm. You always could find something good within people. And if you couldn't, then you just go the other way. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't press the issue.
When you think about the future, what are you looking forward to?
I guess I'm looking forward to seeing my grandson preach.
You and me both.
He's already doing podcasts, and he already sits down with me and my husband when he spends the weekend with us practically. And so we'll sit at the kitchen table and we'll go over, you know, different ideas and he thinks and what he thinks. And it's just like a real good session on different biblical ideas. And it's just eye-opening. Just eye-opening to see how God's working within him. So I'm just anxious to watch and see. He's my main emphasis of knowing that God placed me with him and him with me mm-hmm. for a reason.
Yeah. He's a special young man. Mm-hmm. It's been I've had a couple moments to be around him and just hear his heart, and it's just inspiring.
Yeah.
So. Well, there's one question I like to ask near the end, and that is this. What kind of word or sage advice would you like to leave with our listeners?
I kind of wrote this out. Maybe this is what I need. I said, we've been placed here on earth at this time to make a difference. It doesn't have to be an earth-changing thing for the whole world to know. Just feeling that a few causes that ripple through that affect God's message and what he wants of love that need to be carried out.
That's good. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for coming in and sharing your life, your story with us. And there's a lot to unpack. But we'll have to do that another time.
There's a lot of years in there.
Yeah, there is. It's a beautiful life. So thanks, and God bless you.
Thank you, yep. And God bless you too.
Thank you. A very big thank you to Stephanie for sharing her story. I hope that as you listen to Stephanie, you were inspired, encouraged, and challenged, and that you take up the opportunities you have to listen and behold the really cool people that are around you. The Really Cool People podcast is produced by Schweitzer Church, Springfield, Missouri. Taylor Likes is the executive producer and editor, and I'm your host, Jason Leininger. Until next time, you can help us by liking, reviewing, and sharing this podcast.